Hi, everybody. Welcome back. This is Richard Sacks on Lost Arts Radio. And as you can tell by the music introduction, we're talking about Amazing Grace on different levels. The Amazing Grace that's with us all the time. And one of our relatives, friends, sisters, daughters, whose name is Grace, we're going to hear about her today. And it's going to be a story that personalizes a situation that we're all being faced with right now, where even though it's really hard to grasp because normal people want to see everything as similar to their own worldview, and they have a hard time grasping most of us when things get really changed by the presence of different forces that are not so friendly. And the reality of the situation right now is that in most of the world, positions of power in government, corporations, and certainly the medical system, agencies, and things like that have mostly been infiltrated by negative forces that are involved in a larger agenda to basically enslave and exterminate life. And that's a bottom line that's come out of decades and decades of investigation. And we have a friend here today who's been personally involved in the results of that, Scott Shara, or Shara, you have to tell me if I'm pronouncing it right. I'm sorry. And his daughter Grace was one of the victims of this agenda. And we're going to talk about that in respect to what it says about the medical system, the hospital system, the mind control that we're all being subjected to right now, and details of what's happening and solutions. So it should be super interesting and relevant to your life. Welcome, Scott, and thanks for giving us some time. I appreciate it.
Well, the pleasure's mine. It's an honor to be on the program. So thank you very much. Nice introduction also.
It's great. Okay, so just in case people don't know, this is related to the so-called COVID pandemic. And as we've had many of the doctors that see through that, there is a toxic element that started that so-called pandemic, and it was clearly released by humans. But there's no clarity that it has anything to do with a virus. You know, we're not going to beat around the bush here. If you want to ban us, that's fine. But for the people that are willing to listen, this is not repetition of some kind of theory. This is what we found directly. Real science, I agree with CDC and NIH and all those organizations, that you have to follow real science. It's just that they're not doing that. And what real science does is it questions everything, including what the scientist believes. It's never settled. And when you want to show that there's a virus and a pandemic, one of the things you have to do is to show that it exists, and you do what's called isolating it. Nobody did that in this case. But there are patents that have been explained by many of the scientists and doctors that are willing to be honest about it that go back to the early 2000s. And then now we're announced that this virus is killing everybody, and it's meant to instill fear and facilitate control, and the results of that. And the hospitals are working for money, and there may be some good ones around. I haven't found them yet. And there may be some good people working in them, but to a great extent, they've been willing to carry out murder for money instead of questioning the system. And as long as we're all willing to do that, we don't have a very good future. So we're looking at a decision to go against the status quo and tell the truth. And I think relevant to that is the story of Grace Shara. And we need to hear what happened and all the context of that. So maybe you'd share it with us, Scott.
So I just would like to comment on a couple of things that you just said in your open. One is, are there good hospitals? And, so the answer to that question is yes. And the reason I know that is because 3 days after Grace died, I went to a different hospital, and I just about died the first night, and I would credit them with saving my life.
Wow.
And it's because they did not do anything that was done in the hospital that Grace was killed at. So there are some, you know, one of the take-home messages is exactly that. You can't vet a hospital. By God's grace, I got into a right hospital. It wasn't one that, interestingly, it shares a driveway with a hospital that if we would have went in the other driveway, they share emergency room driveways, I would have been killed.
Wow. Do you want to mention the good hospital's name?
Yeah, it was St. Vincent's Hospital in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Grace died at St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Appleton, Wisconsin. We live halfway between Appleton and Green Bay. And so,
okay. Yeah, because we should support and promote places where they're doing good work.
Then the other thing that I want to mention up front is when I go through what happened with Grace, I want you to get a picture of this as the new standard of care. This is where all of our research is going and why I keep going is with anybody that will have me on, because Grace's death has nothing to do with COVID. So a lot of the people who are watching who are already awake, they're awake to remdesivir and ventilators. Grace was not on either. She was taken out by end-of-life meds and an illegal DNR. And this is already the standard of care in the UK, and it's illegal in the United States. So, you know, when we eventually get to the lawsuit, you know, this will all get exposed. But, you know, lawsuits take a lot of time. So, I mean, I am out on the trail sharing this because this standard of care, when I first saw it with Grace, and then I learned it's the standard of care already state sanctioned. So, I mean, in the United States, this is becoming the standard of care behind the scenes. So when I first saw this with Grace, I thought, you know what? I bet you she's the first one who got where they were caught. And so we've heard of a number of them since then. And it's going to become the norm unless for some reason it gets stopped either by our lawsuit or others, and or God chooses to step in. But, you know, to use end-of-life meds and an illegal DNR on somebody to take them out is, you know, it's unconscionable.
What was she officially in the hospital for?
For COVID pneumonia.
Okay, but you said it had nothing to do with COVID.
Her death had nothing to do with COVID.
Oh, you mean she didn't die from COVID? She died from the others, from the treatments?
She died from the treatments, absolutely. But it wasn't the treatments that you hear about all the time with remdesivir and ventilation. We never approved a vent, and she was never on remdesivir. So she died from them using a combination of meds that should never be used on a person unless they're in hospice and it's end of life. And in order to facilitate it, they put an illegal DNR on her. So then when it was time to use the reversal drug and save her, they wouldn't even do it.
What was the excuse for putting her in that status?
I can't answer that. Okay. I mean, they have refused to meet with us, so I don't know what their excuse is.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, there is no excuse. I mean, I believe the excuse was that she is disabled. You know, so just, you know, if we jump in, I just always start every time telling a little bit about Grace. I know you're the Our Amazing Grace, or not Our Amazing Grace song is right on. Grace was amazing. She's, you know, she is the instant motivation for telling the story. You know, when we had Grace, we made a conscious decision to let God lead in the baby department. We were 39 years old. Mm-hmm. We had a 14-year-old son named Travis, a 12-year-old daughter named Jessica, and we're 39. I mean, we just had the 2.1 kids, 1.7 dogs, and, you know, the whole thing you're supposed to have, right?
Yeah.
So then we decided to let God lead, and he blessed us with Grace. We named her Grace after God's grace.
Right.
She was a real gift. She was an angel. She was super high functioning. My wife did a fantastic job with homeschooling her. She could read and write. You know, I did the dad things. I taught her how to drive a car when she was 13.
Wow.
You know, the stuff you're not supposed to do, right? But I mean, she could do everything. She was.
Now, the reason that you're mentioning this, you should also include, is that she had Down syndrome, right?
That's right. So I'm mentioning this because, you know, she was disabled with Down syndrome. But, you know, if I look at Grace compared to me, I'm the disabled one.
Right. Because
Grace, well, Grace had a gift that is the only time I know I can do it is when I'm sleeping, which is she loves the unlovable. Yeah, right. I have a hard time with that. I just, you know, when somebody is a pain in the rear end or an idiot or whatever it is, I mean, I have a hard time loving them.
You know, many of us believe in doing that, but doing it in real life is a whole different level, right?
And Grace did it in real life, real time, 24/7.
Yeah,
she was wonderful. I mean, I have never missed somebody like this.
Wow.
She was a real gift. I'll just tell you, Father's Day was just on Sunday, and I'll just tell you, several Father's Days ago, when it was probably five, maybe longer than 5 years ago, but I said, Grace, let's go fishing. And so we have a couple ponds in our yard, and I said, we're gonna catch our supper. So if we don't catch anything, we're not eating.
Right.
And so we caught three real nice perch and a crappie, a big, huge crappie. And so I put them in a pail, and you know, we get done, and she had named the crappie Angel. And so you know, I start doing the cleaning, and she starts crying, and my wife is there. She said, well, she's crying. What are we going to do? You know, I said, well, Cindy, that the fisher, you know, that ship has sailed already. You know, they've been in a bucket too long. They're not going to live if I throw them back. And so, you know, Grace, she really understands the circle of life. And this is a great story. So, you know, she's crying because Angel is going to get, you know, filleted. And ultimately, my wife made up the fish, and she ate Angel with a smile on her face and loved it. So she really got stuff.
Compassion for all life forms.
Yeah, for all. And we are pets. And anyway, that's a little bit about Grace. So moving on to her hospital stay, Grace was 19 years old. She got COVID around September 28th. And we were fully prepared for COVID at home. We had all the frontline doctor's materials, including a nebulizer, ivermectin. Grace was on a vitamin protocol beforehand.
What kind of symptoms? I mean, since we know, even though we're told otherwise, there is no test to show that anybody has COVID.
There's just she really just had a runny nose at that time. And so the reason we say now it was COVID at that point is because October 1st, we did a home test. She tested positive. We did a home test because of the fact that, you know, she just, in our opinion, she just had a cold. But we thought, well, we have a wedding we want to go to. We thought, let's test her just to make sure we're not spreading it at the wedding. So she tested positive. We stayed home. Again, we didn't think anything of it. But then we were monitoring her oxygen, and her oxygen saturation on October 6th was, she couldn't get above 90. She was in the high 80s. And so that we perceived as an emergency. And so ultimately that led to a trip to urgent care and then to the emergency room. At urgent care, they did a blood test and saw that she had high D-dimer. So they set this all up as an emergency. And at this point, I mean, before all of this happened, I had a healthy distrust for, you know, the whole system. You know, so I really thought the hospital is part of the system. The government bureaucracy is got a wide net, but so it was just a healthy distrust. It wasn't that I thought that the whole thing is completely corrupt, which is what I believe now.
Hadn't been vaccinated, right?
That's correct. She had never been vaccinated with anything.
Wow. Okay.
And so that was one of the things, which this is great. You can just keep firing questions as we go. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, I hope you don't mind. I'm not meaning to interrupt or anything.
No, I prefer that because people, you know, I know this story inside and out. So asking the question live is the best way to do it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, she was not vaccinated. And on top of that, they they mentioned the fact that she wasn't vaccinated in the hospital record, so much so they said bluntly, if Grace would have been vaccinated, she would not be here. That's right in the doctor's reports.
Exactly. Yeah. According to them, you were really a bad parent.
Correct. Yeah. And many other things. I mean, they had not only that we're not vaccinated, they've had the fact that we're Christian, that we're following the frontline doctors' misinformation campaign. That's what they call it.
Wow. A danger to everybody.
The thing that really put me over the top with the bias is that there were 22 doctors' reports for the 7 days Grace was in. So every time a doctor would come in the room, the protocol is they have to write a report. So we have all those doctors' reports, and they reference the fact that Grace had Down syndrome 36 different times in those 22 reports.
Right, just in case you forgot, I guess.
Yeah, it's so, I mean, those are the four biases that I have charted. And, you know, it was just, there was an overall bias of an aloofness. You know, looking down on, you know,
of course,
you're just a dad. You don't know anything.
You're not even a doctor. I mean, how could you have any judgment? One question without losing your train of thought there. When they were saying repeatedly, she wasn't even vaccinated, or, you know, and that's your fault that she was in the hospital. Do you think that the medical personnel and nurses and doctors and everybody that wrote that stuff, are they really so uninformed that they believe that, or is there something else going on? I mean, they might be.
That's a great question. I mean, I've got a whole bunch of theories on that topic.
These are not stupid people.
Right, they are not stupid people. It is rare. So, I mean, I have heart disease, and when I first was diagnosed with heart disease, I started researching, and I found out the same pattern that the cardiologists are uneducated on. So I invested about 300 hours studying heart disease, and I found out the cardiologists were uneducated on heart disease.
Yeah. Didn't come from the school or the drug companies, then why look at it, right?
Correct. So, yeah, it's uneducated is certainly a piece of it. But think it through this way. So, you know, you still have a responsibility, if you're uneducated on a topic, to do research, especially when you see a pattern. So just a simple example that I would share is that if you are going to reshingle your house, so you buy the shingles, you buy the shingle nails, and you start laying the shingles down, and if you hit your thumb with the hammer, so you'd think, oh my gosh, that hurt. Then you hit your thumb again with the hammer and again with the hammer. So now you got three hits of the thumb with the hammer under your belt. Aren't you going to, at that point, some light bulb is going to come on and say, you know what, I might be holding this nail wrong, right? I mean,
isn't that what they used to call, what was it, common sense?
Well, it's common sense and critical thinking. But so now I overlay that simple example with, you know, I'm a doctor. I just saw a patient die from remdesivir, an event. Well, now another one died of remdesivir, an event. In fact, boy, every time I do remdesivir, an event, the patient dies. So that would motivate me then that evening after I'm done with my shift, after three patients died, to start going online and start wondering, you know, what are the alternative treatments?
Right. So they're just really well trained that if a question about that comes up, where to look? You look at the drug manufacturer's manual, and they say in there, there's no correlation. And then you know there's no correlation, and that's the end of it.
It just seems so crazy, you know, they're looking, you know, and they're looking in the wrong source. I mean, there's an awful lot of money behind this.
Yeah.
So then there's fear. There's also, you know, after the Adolf Eichmann trial in 1961, the Milgram obedience experiment was put out. So there's also that going on.
Yeah.
There's also a certain segment of the population who actually believes they're doing society a favor by taking out people like Grace and the elderly.
Right.
You know, there is a percentage that are genuinely uneducated, but I think that percentage is extremely rare because, you know, they could only be uneducated after the first three deaths. After that, you can't be uneducated anymore.
I don't know. I think the psychological programming is really sophisticated and effective, not safe, but effective. And it's meant to kind of armor these people against common sense so that if they see 30 deaths right after taking remdesivir on the ninth day or whatever, they look it up in the journal that says remdesivir is great, and that's the end of it. So they're kind of conditioned to look in one place for the answer, no matter how many times it happens.
I think that's right. The psychological conditioning, I want to mention something that this is where our research is headed. Mm-hmm. The term is banality of evil. This came out of the Adolf Eichmann trial too. And so banality means common. So evil is so commonplace, you don't recognize it. So in Nazi Germany, that was happening. In Nazi Germany, the difference was they were even publishing the evil. So they had the whole society in on taking out the disabled. So right. The disabled were taken out before the Jews. So it was published. So now our society is much more sophisticated. But the commonplace or the banality of evil, so now it was published and dirty back then. Now it's not published and clean. So now the lab coats are the ones doing it. The doctors and nurses were involved back then too, but I mean, they're doing it with the jab. They're doing it with the hospitals, which you'll hear in Grace's case. Right. They've been setting this up for decades. You know, 67% of Down syndrome children are already aborted. And a young person who gets pregnant is already convinced by their doctor to get an amnio. If the amnio shows a negative outcome, they're encouraged to get an abortion. So this psychology that you're talking about is already there. Similarly, what do we do with the elderly? You know, so right. When I was a kid and you were a kid, it was very uncommon to use a nursing home for your parents. Mm-hmm. Now it's automatic.
Well, it's on both ends of the life spectrum. It was very uncommon to sub out raising your kids to a preschool daycare place.
Bingo. So this banality of evil, it's just way more sophisticated today than it was back then. And
yeah.
That's why you see so many people are in on it, and they don't even know they're in on it.
No, they're just following orders of the authority, and the authority has either a white coat or credentials or something.
Correct.
And then the ones up higher in the system, they have additional motivation in threats to their family or bribes and other things like that. It's pretty complex.
It's extremely complex, and it's scary complex. I'm not scared of it. I mean, I'm glad I'm woken up, but I mean, it's when I say scary complex is they've got not only people doing this, but I mean, the whole society has been indoctrinated.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So let's go back to the story when you were taking Grace into urgent care. What happened?
So then we end up in the emergency room. They did a CT scan because of the high D dimer uncovered in the urgent care. That came back negative. A question that is a logical question is, well, if you're on the frontline doctor's protocol, why did Grace's oxygen drop? And so I researched that because I ended up as I said at the beginning, in a different hospital 3 days after Grace died, and my oxygen was substantially lower than Grace's. And Grace never had a breathing problem. I was gasping for air.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, if she was having breathing trouble.
No, none whatsoever. And, you know, when I first got to the hospital, you know, I had the same thing. The doctor asked me, the emergency room doctor, are you vaccinated? I said, no. And he starts lecturing me on vaccinations. And I said, listen, I do not need this lecture now. I need oxygen. I said, I can't breathe. Yeah. And anyway, you know, fortunately, when I got checked into the room, the attitude of the staff there was completely different, and they were fantastic. Like I said, they saved the day. But ultimately, Dr. Chetty is the one who connected the dots for me. He's a South African doctor, and he had about 8,000 patients with the Delta variant, and he concluded that if you have a genetic disposition to clot and produce inflammation, which I have both of those, that it's going to impact your oxygen saturation if you have the Delta variant. So I believe Grace would have inherited those from me. She was never diagnosed, but I mean, it would be logical because my wife's symptoms were even worse than Grace's and mine, but she never went below 95% oxygen saturation.
So Grace was being affected by blood clots to some degree because of the D-dimer result.
Well, they did a CT scan, and same as me, I had a CT scan. I didn't have any clots, but I have a clotting disorder.
Okay.
So I've had two surgeries lifetime. Both surgeries, I ended up with blood clots. That's why I know I have a clotting disorder. Okay. And my heart disease was produced by inflammation. So I knew I have both of those, and that's why I believe that both Grace and I were impacted that way.
So I would imagine that you've learned natural things to do for the heart condition too at this point.
Correct. I mean, it's I did a complete, you know, so once you do the research, you realize what's going on. And my primary care doctor was, I mean, he's one that gets it. So, I mean, I went in and I showed him what's going on. And I said, listen, this is what I'm doing. And then he let me order my own tests. You know, you always have to have the doctor sign up, but he would sign off on everything that I wanted because he said, you know, what you know is 10 years ahead of what we know.
Wow. So what trusted. A wonderful doctor.
It was great. I mean, that is such a strange thing. But so then I ordered all my own tests. I get my blood work, and then you see, oh boy, I mean, I was borderline diabetic, even though I always was healthy. I mean, I was healthy. And I only got the CT scan for my heart because I was going in for my 55-year-old physical.
I just asked
the doctor, should I do the scan? And he just casually said, might as well, you know, like it's no biggie, you're healthy. And then, you know, then I got the bad news. So anyway, that doesn't matter. We're getting off track. But anyway, so now, you know, ultimately the emergency room physician recommended that we admit Grace to the hospital. Mm-hmm. She framed it such that, you know, we'll put Grace on oxygen and a steroid. She'll be here for, you know, 3-4 days and get her out of here.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So I said, I'll be staying with her. And the attending nurse said, well, you can't. I said, well, what's the reason? She said, we don't allow visitors on the COVID wing. I said, well, then I'll be taking Grace home. And she came back after 2 hours, said we had a meeting and decided you can stay as long as you don't leave the room. So, I mean, that's how I got in the room. So, I mean, Grace's case is unique in, you know, very few people have been in the room. And my background before the business I own now is that I'm still legally a CPA. And so CPAs are used to audit trails and taking notes. And so, I mean, notes the whole time. I mean, I'm researching, taking notes. Every time they bring up something, I look it up, see what's going on. I had a doctor friend on the outside that helped. And so, I mean, that I have contemporaneous notes that helps this whole credibility of this story. And, you know, that's one reason I was able to do all this research is because of that skill set. And so, I mean, you know, praise God that he gave me that skill set to put all this together.
Yeah, that was important, especially for whatever legal cases it leads to. Those are all based on recording data and observation,
correct,
documentation, stuff like that.
So the first day that we were in the emergency room, then approximately 10 hours, about midnight on October 7th, got into the room. That first day on October 7th was fantastic. That first night was was fine other than the alarms were going off constantly. And so I requested that they have the alarms go off at the nurse's station, and they lied to me and said that they can't. The reason I know it's a lie is because the other hospital that I went to, I requested the same thing, and they respected my wishes.
So when you're looking at incidents like that, lying about the alarms, what do you think is the mentality behind that? It's just saying, well, this is inconvenient, just tell them whatever, you know, and don't do it.
Well, the biggest problem with our human condition is the desire to control. So, I mean, I just see it as that, you know,
it's just a way to control you.
Right. I mean, that's how we're all wired that way, unless you submit to God. But, you know, so I just saw it as, you know, they're wanting to control versus the other hospital. You know, they respected my wishes. I could hardly believe it.
Right.
I mean, I believe I was put into that other hospital so that I could objectively tell this story.
Yeah, and see the contrast.
Right, because otherwise you don't really realize, but then you see, oh my gosh, this hospital saved my life, and this hospital did this. I mean, and virtually every single step was different.
Wow.
You know, so then as I started studying, you see the money and you see how all this fits together, then you can see, I mean, it's there is a standard of care that will save people's lives. But I mean, it takes, unfortunately, it should just take the Hippocratic Oath, but it takes a doctor and nurse to stand up now against the narrative. And, you know, very few are willing to do that because, you know, their paycheck and their livelihood and everything that they went to school for, that's all on the line if you go against the narrative.
Absolutely. Yeah. Some of them are personally attacked.
The next thing that the first significant thing that happened. So I'm just going to go through two significant events, because it gives you kind of frames this whole thing, and they're very important events. So the first one was the morning of October 8th. So this was the morning of the second day. And a pulmonologist came in at 8 o'clock in the morning and said, you're going to need to put your daughter on a ventilator in the next 2 hours. And so I said, what is that recommendation based on? And he said, we did a blood gas draw last night, and the results show Grace is not doing well. So I asked about the timing of the blood gas draw, and he explained, and I said, I don't think those numbers are accurate. And the reason they're not accurate is because what they did to Grace is they started her on a regular cannula for oxygen. And then they, you know, strange that, you know, they have these ways, and this is a way. So Grace had sleep apnea. So I had her sleep apnea machine there. We did the research after the fact, we found out, I mean, she could have just used her own sleep apnea machine. That's all we needed to do.
Right.
They had me convinced that this oxygen is an emergency. I mean, it didn't take much because I perceived that as an emergency.
So this blood gas test, is it saying supposedly that there's too much CO2 and not enough oxygen, something like that?
Well, I don't remember that he pointed to a specific situation, but what had happened the night before is Grace was on a regular cannula, then they switched her to a high flow cannula, which she didn't like at all. And then we went to a BiPAP. And so there was a period of a couple of hours where it was a very frustrating time where I'm working with the two nurses and we're trying to get Grace to settle down because she's really irritated with this high flow cannula. So at the high point of that, her blood pressure was at 235 over 135 and her heart rate was 150 beats a minute. So my own common sense says, you know, if you take a blood gas draw during that window,
right,
you know, it can't be accurate. So I asked him to take another draw, which they did, and Grace was fine. So then I asked him, what is the prognosis?
See, they should be apologizing at that point, right?
Well, I agree. Wait to hear the next story. But I asked him then, what is the prognosis if Grace goes on a ventilator? And he said, only 20% of people walk out alive when they're on a ventilator. The attending nurse started crying, and I got to talk with her, and she had a daughter named Grace, and the reason she's crying is she knew that if I approved a ventilator, Grace was going to die. At this point, I knew nothing about ventilators other than I just thought it was a tool because of how President Trump had rolled out the ventilator shortage at the beginning of COVID.
Yeah, so because he knew nothing about it. That's why he did it.
I think it was unknowingly. So I started looking up ventilators. I found out that the real numbers are about 15% walk out alive. And of those 15%, most have significant trouble such that they die in the first year after having a vent. And a vent really is not a tool that should ever be used with COVID pneumonia.
Right.
COVID pneumonia is an inflammation problem. It's not, I mean, I don't know if they're labeling it pneumonia on purpose to get people thinking of it differently or not, but you know, it's all a bunch of lies with respect to that. So we made the decision at that point, we're not going to put Grace on a ventilator.
Right.
And they asked us after that first attempt, they asked us for a pre-authorization, us, my wife, Cindy and I, for a pre-authorization just in case. I mean, the just in case they framed such that, well, you know, these type of things happen in the middle of the night when we can't get over with family. So we'd like you guys to make a decision on this so that
if just in case we can kick you out of the room and do it in private.
Bingo. And that's what I found out. So we rejected that request every single time that they asked. Ultimately, so now we dodged the ventilator bullet. Then after Grace died, I found out the why behind it. You know, that's where the big money is. If you can
get
on a ventilator, they make about $300,000 on a ventilator. So it's the jackpot for them. So you get the why behind it. But, you know, it's way deeper than the money. The money is just the grease that's making it
absolutely
happen.
But there are levels in the system where they only know about the money. So the hospital administration may know about the money and put a lot of pressure on the doctors to make the people agree to it.
Well, there's huge pressure. In the case of Grace's hospital stay, it was Ascension Hospital System. Ascension Hospital System is 142 hospitals. Yeah. They received from the federal government in the first year, just the first year of COVID, they received $10 billion in bonus money.
For 142 hospitals?
That's correct.
That's a lot per hospital.
Just think about what that means. I mean, so you can see the financial temptation. So you look at the three legs of the stool that I see with the hospital administration is first the financial temptation. It is too much. It pushes them over the top. Then they have immunity from liability under the PREP Act.
Right.
And they have a shroud of secrecy. So when you hear the vent and remdesivir stories, which I've heard tons of them, and we have 50 some stories on our website, and you know, people are reaching out to us all the time, and it's always in the shroud of secrecy when they do these vents.
Yeah.
And you know, so you have that three-way combination, and you know, they're getting away with murder. So
And that's not a, you know, expression or something you just say. They're literally committing mass murder.
Well, in Grace's case, it only about 5-6 weeks ago, I have started saying on the air that I believe Grace's case was premeditated murder. And it's because I'm analytical. I mean, most people are calling it murder at the beginning, but I had to prove it myself. And you know, the amount of evidence that I have now has put it over the top for me personally, where that's what I'm calling it.
Right.
Because that's what I believe now.
And that's from the details that you're in the middle of explaining, right?
Correct. Yeah. And especially when we get into, you know, I'm just setting up the story right now with these type of things to give you, this just gives you the perspective of the hospital. So they have this one perspective, they're trying to push a vent. Then the other one is they have an incentive to falsify records. So on October 9th, the Grace got up. She wanted to eat, so I ordered food. I started feeding her. Of course, you know, Grace could feed herself, but not with the BiPAP mask on.
Right, right.
The nurse came running in and said, "You can't do that." I said, "What's the reason?" And she said, her oxygen saturation is only at 85%. And so I had all of my COVID materials in the room, which included my own oxygen finger meter, the pulse. Mm-hmm. And so I processed what she said for about 15 minutes. And I thought, this cannot be right. I mean, she was on a regular cannula in the emergency room and she's in the high 90s. And now you got this BiPAP mask on. It can't be at 85. So I put my finger meter on Grace and it read 95%. And so now the nurse, I called the nurse back in and I said, is my finger meter accurate? And she said, yes, it is. And I said, well, why is my $50 meter more accurate than your $50,000 machine?
Right.
She said, because the leads get sweaty. And I said,
Because the
leads get sweaty. You know, so they had this finger meter on Grace, but it has leads on it.
Yeah.
Underneath, they have it taped on her finger. And so I said, well, if that's a known, why don't you proactively change these leads out every 3 or 4 hours or whatever it takes, given that this is the primary tool you're using to make recommendations for my daughter's care? Okay. And she snottily responded, you should just be thankful you caught this. Again, you like you said with the other one, you think that they would apologize, but I mean, you know, no. I'm just a dumb dad.
You know, the programming is not just to misunderstand the situation. The programming is to get mad if it's questioned.
Absolutely. You know, and she certainly
we can't talk about it. Yeah.
Great. She showed the way she was, no doubt about it. And it's frustrating. So, you know, ultimately I'm wise to oxygen. And So we're monitoring Grace's oxygen on our own. And if you just process, so you'd think, well, you know, we call out the faulty equipment. And you think, well, what's their motivation to have faulty equipment?
Right.
And in Grace's case, they only changed out these leads 3 times in the 7 days she was in the hospital. I know that because I have the bill they sent to Medicaid.
And why do the leads get ruined so fast?
I don't know how fast they get ruined, but she said they get sweaty. You know, so the patient's sweating and it must screw with
patients have been known to have sweat.
Yeah. Right. It's the blinding flash of the eye.
It's like somebody should have figured this out, right?
And I mean, she obviously knew the answer, but didn't want to do anything about it. You know, I challenged the faulty equipment directly with the doctor. Nothing happened. On Grace's last day, they had oxygen readings on 2 different machines at 44 and 69%. And my daughter was reading it on the pulse ox at 93%. You know, and so what
it's almost like they figure, well, you know, if this patient dies, we have other patients.
I'm positive that's the case. And they can justify, you know, if somebody's sharp enough to get the records after their loved one dies and they see they put them on a vent, well, they can have faulty records to show that, well, he was only at 70% oxygen. We had to put him on a vent.
Right.
But nobody's, how do these machines get calibrated?
You know, and he would have died much worse if it hadn't been for the ventilator.
Exactly. That's the excuses that you, I mean, when you read the stories, I mean, it's so egregious. Wow. So, you know, that oxygen thing, now we're wise to. And the next day, I don't want to invest a lot of time in this, was October 10th. And ultimately, the head nurse came in with an armed guard at 7 o'clock in the morning. This is a Sunday morning, and said, you need to leave immediately. And, you know, the primary excuse was the last 3 shifts of nurses don't want you in the room. And it's because I was challenging. And so, you know, ultimately, I did leave peacefully after about an hour. That was maybe the hardest day of my life because I gave Grace a hug. I remember.
Because on a deeper level, they have no right to chase you out of there.
Well, I agree. But she said, you know, so the armed guard is there. And she said, we're going to call the Appleton police if you don't. You know, I argued with her for an hour. And so I called an attorney friend of mine, and he recommended leaving peacefully. And so I did. And the armed guard walked me out to my truck and said, Scott, you should take this to a higher level. So, I mean, it was.
In other words, he realized that it wasn't right.
That's correct. So we had 44 hours then without an advocate in the room. And during that 44 hours, they ratchet up a drug called Presidex. This is a sedation med, and this is the first cause of death.
So why don't you spell that name for us?
Presidex is P-R-E-C-E-D-E-X.
Okay.
just like it sounds, press, but the S is a C, Precedex. Okay. So this is a sedation med that's used for surgery. It's used to knock people up for surgery. This is the, there's three causes of death in Grace's case. This is the first cause of death. And so Precedex is the reason they're using it with COVID is they have to sedate the patient to get a ventilator.
Yeah. Exactly. Nobody would put up with it otherwise.
Correct. So basically they're sedating them, you know, the entire time to get them set up for a vent. And right. So they kept sedating Grace thinking, you know, eventually this family is going to allow us to do a vent. But the package insert, all these drugs have package inserts, which are the rules. In this one's case, it says, I'm just reading it right off of the package insert right now. Adverse reactions associated with infusions greater than 24 hours in duration include ARDS, which is acute respiratory distress syndrome, respiratory failure, and agitation. On Grace's death certificate, the first cause of death listed, the immediate cause of death is acute respiratory failure with hypoxemia. So, I mean, you'd heard me just got done reading that this is a direct cause of using Precedex more than 24 hours. They had Grace on it four full days before her last day. They started on October 9th. And hypoxemia is another side effect of Precedex. So that became, and of course, they list COVID-19 pneumonia as the second cause of death. So they got a $13,000 bonus for taking her out.
Right.
So that's a fairly big deal. You'll hear how that fits into the last day here when we get there. So my wife could not be the replacement advocate because she had COVID. My daughter Jessica now came in to be the replacement advocate. Jessica will be 32 on Saturday, to give you a perspective of her age.
Did she get to be there while you were prevented from being there?
No, because we had that gap. We had 44 hours where we had to hire Grace's special needs attorney to negotiate with the hospital attorney to get an advocate back in.
Oh, okay, which burned up the time.
Very frustrating. So they increased the dosage of Precedex seven different times during that 44-hour window.
So if you had been sitting there, they would have had to ask you if they could do that, right?
Well, that's a great question. They would have had to ask me legally whether I'm sitting there or not.
Okay. It comes back to the informed consent issue.
That's correct. They never gave us informed consent on Precedex.
And normally informed consent is ignored.
Yes.
Otherwise, they'd be taking all their time saying, and there's 10 different ways this drug can kill you. Would you like to have some? Or this other one will kill you in 12 ways. And it would be bad for business to have informed consent with stuff like that.
Absolutely. And what they already knew what I was doing. I mean, when they were telling me things, I was looking up the drugs. And so the chief COVID guy in charge, his name was Dr. Zimet. You know, he wanted to put Grace on toxilizumab right away. And so I asked him to spell it. I look it up. This guy had a monster chip on his shoulder. He was so arrogant. So I look it up. He comes back. What did you decide? And I had done the research, and I had the doctor who's helping on the outside do the research too. And we both concluded no. And so I showed him the study. Actually, I didn't show him. I showed his companion, Dr. Leonard, the study from the New England Journal of Medicine that showed that the placebo group did better than the drug, and the drug has umpteen side effects. I said, so why would I do this to my daughter?
His attitude get any better when you did that?
Oh, yeah, you bet it did. I mean, he gave me a big hug and kiss and said, boy, you really enlightened me.
Wow.
Yeah. Can you imagine joking.
A doctor with that much experience and that much intelligence, and it never occurred to him to question this stuff until then?
He was mad. I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, it was hard to grasp. I mean, so then the blood gas numbers were charted on the wall in Grace's room. I had another doctor chart them so I could understand this, so I could see trends. So then he starts, when I told him about toxilizumab, he started in, well, what does that mean? What are those numbers there? And I said, right, those are the blood gas
numbers.
Did
you show him your little oxygen meter that you brought from home?
I mean, he just wanted to make me look, he's going to show me that I don't know anything. So he was going to put me in my place.
Right.
It was interesting. But, wow. Okay. So now, anyway, Jessica gets in the room. A funny story. So Jessica, they made her gown up. You know, when they didn't make me gown up because I challenged it. I said, what is the reason you want me to gown up? Because they told me I'm going to get COVID. So I said, what am I protecting? He said, you guys are coming in here in spacesuits. So they didn't make me gown up. Well, they made Jessica gown up and she didn't feel comfortable challenging because I had just got kicked out 2 days earlier.
Right.
So, you know, she goes in the room with Grace and Grace, you know, she starts talking to Grace, but she's got everything on. So Grace says to her, you sound just like my big sister, Jessica. And Jess says, I am your big sister, Jessica. And Grace gives her a look like that can't be. But Jessica has tattoos on both of her arms. So she takes up her sleeves and shows her and they give a big hug. And
wow.
It was fantastic. So Grace's last night on this earth was October 12th.
Yeah.
Jessica recorded Grace's oxygen all night long at 98%, 99%. Before Grace went to bed, she sat up in the bed and Jessica called her two boys, Grace's nephews, on FaceTime. Through the BiPAP, Grace waves at them and hollers, hi, boys. You know, so even, you know, Jess just thought Grace was, well, she's awful sleepy, but she just thought, well, she's in the hospital, you know, but she's sleepy because they got her on Precedex.
Right.
So at this time, she's on this drug 4 full days, but you can still tell by what I'm telling you, she's still normal.
And yeah, so she had a lot of resistance to the drug.
Yeah, she was a tough kid.
Yeah.
So anyway, the next morning, now I'm going to walk through what happened. And so this will cover the second and third causes of death. So there's a lot of detail here that I want to cover. So at approximately 8 o'clock, the doctor called Cindy and I. This is on Grace's last day, October 13th. And the purpose of his call was to ask our decision on a ventilator. He had called us the night before, went through all this rigmarole with a ventilator, really drilled it down, you know, and so we said, no, we're not doing a ventilator. And I think we sealed Grace's death that day by saying, no, I think they finally realized we are not going to convince this family. And the statistics that day, the hospital was at maximum capacity. The emergency room was at maximum capacity. And they were only making $1,680 a day on Grace because we would not approve a ventilator.
So that must have been stressful for them psychologically. That they were losing all that money. Right?
They're losing all that money. So I believe we sealed her fate that day.
You couldn't have done anything different because if you agreed to it, the ventilator is a weapon anyway.
Correct. She would have just died a different day. But, you know, as I look at it now, that's of course speculation. So there's evidence that is direct evidence. I'm going to go through that, but there's also circumstantial evidence. Okay. And so that example with where the financial situation and the statistics for bed capacity, that's all true, but it's circumstantial evidence. It doesn't prove anything. It just is another piece of the puzzle.
Right.
There was a 14-year ICU nurse in charge of Grace's care that day. So just process that when we go through the story. So it wasn't a rookie. So now after we get done talking about the ventilator, the doctor says to us, I think we need to start working on nutrition because, you know, we got to work on getting Grace ready to get out of here. And so Grace is malnourished at this point because they wouldn't let me feed her. They wouldn't let Jess feed her. And the nurses sedated her instead of feeding her. And they only gave her a few protein shakes. So we foolishly agreed to a feeding tube. And I say foolishly in light of the fact that, you know, now we understand the malnourishment was self-inflicted. But Grace also had a PICC line, so she could have been fed TPN food. But he convinced us to do the feeding tube. And I think, this is another piece of circumstantial evidence. And you'll see how that fits into the story when I go through the timeline. So we agree to this thing. So now in that same phone call, I do want to cover this because I want to make sure people understand the concept. So then he starts going through. So he said, you know, what's your decision on a ventilator? We said no. Then he says, Grace had such a good day yesterday, we should work on nutrition. So then we approve a feeding tube. Then he starts going into this hypothetical discussion about a do not resuscitate, which is a DNR. Says, you know, what would you guys want to do if this happened? And we're thinking, you know, what are you even talking about? We're talking about getting Grace and nutrition to get her out. And, but he asked, you know, this idea, well, you know, would you, you know, if Grace is at the point where she can't even be resuscitated, should we just keep resuscitating her over and over? What do you want to do? He said, well, of course, you're not going to keep resuscitating over and over and over. That would never make sense to anybody. Those three things happened in this conversation. Mm-hmm. So now Jessica says we're done. She says to the 14-year ICU nurse that she wants to take a shower, or that she's going to take a shower. And the nurse says to her, well, you can't take a shower in the room. And Jessica said, well, when my dad was here, he took a shower in the room. So what do you mean? She said, I don't care what we did for your dad. You need to go home and take a shower. So again, Jessica being at least a little bit afraid of being kicked out, because I was now kicked out just 3 days earlier, right, decides, okay, I'll go home and take a shower. Again, circumstantial evidence, but significant. She comes back inside of an hour. She overhears the head doctor and another doctor and this nurse in the hallway say, the family's not going to like this. So she asked, what aren't they going to like? And they said, we had to restrain Grace while you were gone, which means they strapped her down to the bed. So she said, why? Well, she wanted to get out of the bed and go to the bathroom. So they strapped her down instead of helping her get out of the bed to go to the bathroom.
You might come to the conclusion that these people are criminally insane.
Well, I agree.
Know better, right?
This is what made me research the Down syndrome thing, because I think they did this because they could. Again, circumstantial evidence. So they made her poop in the bed. Now they take off restraints. All the while, they're using each step as an excuse to ratchet up Precedex further. At 10:48 in the morning, now I'm going to go through these times. Is each of these things is time stamped in the records. I have this on Grace's website on the tragedy tab. It's under Thou Shall Not Kill, and it's got the timeline stamped. So at 10:48, now they have her on a near max dose of Precedex. So this is the dose that would knock, you know, starts getting you ready for surgery, near max dose. At 11:25, they gave her a dose of lorazepam, which is an anti-anxiety med. She's already almost completely out of it, but they
so
give
you, you have to decode what anti-anxiety means.
Well, that would mean to if somebody's anxious about something, to give them a med so it stops their anxiety.
It's a depressant.
Correct. It's a depressant. Exactly right. And there's the package insert for morphine, which is, you'll hear that coming up, says to not combine these three drugs, Precedex, lorazepam, or morphine, because it can cause death. So now they give her this lorazepam. So that's at 11:25. At 11:37, they insert the feeding tube. So if nutrition was so important, would you think they would start feeding her then? But they wait 2 hours and 22 minutes to x-ray that the feeding tube is in the right place. So at 1:59 in the afternoon, they do an x-ray and now start feeding her. And at this point, Grace is knocked out.
Right.
So they start feeding her after she's knocked out. And Jess is in the room. She knows Grace is knocked out. Grace never recovered from that.
Right. So and this makes sense then why they talk about DNR, because they knew on some level that this was going to happen.
And I'll just jump to that. You know, we'll go into the detail, but we found out subsequent to Tom Renz getting involved, because the medical malpractice nurse said we were missing at least 1,000 pages of records. And so when she got those extra records, we found out they put the DNR on at 10:56 that morning. So that was only 8 minutes after maxing her out on the Precedex, which one of the attorneys believes that, you know, they had to do it. You just came to that same conclusion. They had to get this DNR in place to accomplish the dirty
work. It's almost like they practiced this routine before. Grace was not the first one.
Well, that's why I'm saying I believe it's premeditated. At 5:46, they gave her another dose of lorazepam. 3 minutes later, another dose. And at 6:15, they gave her a 2 milligram dose of morphine as an IV push. So now in 29 minutes, she has this near max dose Precedex, two doses of lorazepam and morphine, which that would have taken you and I and anybody out. Right. So that's cause of death number two, is that med combination. And for that med combination, where I go to it being premeditated, is for that med combination to happen, the doctor in charge had to sign off, a pharmacist had to sign off, the alarm system would have went off because of the package insert for morphine saying that these meds cause death when used in combination, and the 14-year ICU nurse had to make a decision to inject Grace with those meds. So now, between Grace died at 7:27, so an hour and 12 minutes later, Jess starts feeling Grace getting cold. Sometime plus or minus 7 o'clock, she goes and asks the ICU nurse to take a temp. She said that's normal. Just cover with a blanket. Once they gave Grace morphine, no nurse or doctor stepped foot into that room, even though the package insert says specifically you're supposed to monitor the patient and keep the reversal drug bedside. Neither of those happened. Jessica called Cindy and I at 7:20 on a FaceTime call, panicking, and she said, "Dad, Grace's numbers are dropping like crazy." And I said, "Get the nurses in." She said, "They won't come in. I've been trying." Wow. She estimated 30 nurses in the hallway at this point. So Cindy and I start screaming, "Save our daughter." And that's when we learned there was a DNR, because they holler back, "She's DNR." And we holler back, "She's not DNR. Save our daughter." And this whole DNR situation violates 7 state statutes. The most egregious is, even if Grace would have put a DNR order on herself, I'll just read the state statutes.
Yeah.
It says, a guardian or healthcare agent may revoke a DNR order by giving directions to resuscitate the patient. So no matter who put it on, if the doctor put it on, Grace put it on, which the doctor put it on illegally, but if Grace would have put it on herself legally, my wife was the healthcare agent, by us saying she's not DNR, save our daughter, that created the legal obligation to null and void the DNR and use the reversal drug. They refused to do it, and we watched.
It sounds like a well-rehearsed routine.
That's what I think, and you know, it's even worse than that. There was an armed guard posted outside the room during this whole time, and we know that because after everything was done that night, Jessica told us about the armed guard. And we know he was posted because after Grace died, Jessica crawled in bed with her and held her until I could get Cindy to the hospital. And that armed guard stood outside the nurse's window and watched Jessica the entire time. How we got clued into this is that evening after Cindy and Jess cleaned Grace up, our pastor met us there. He walked Cindy out in a wheelchair, and one of the nurses had Grace's belongings on a cart and leaned down and said to Cindy, "Me and several nurses don't think Grace should have died today." And that opened up, you know, all this research that I am summarizing for you right now.
We need to get to the conclusion of this. And is it okay for you to give us a few minutes extra over what we talked about?
Yes.
Because we need to do that extra segment at the end.
Yes.
And I don't want to cut this short at all. This is really important. The time just goes fast.
It does. So that's the story. So what other questions do you have?
Well, I think what's important from a story like that, I feel fine for Grace now. I'm sure she's doing great.
Yeah.
But it's really hard on the people who are still here.
Absolutely.
You know, the one, it's kind of a reverse for the conventional point of view. You feel sorry for people that are dead, in quotes. I think the dead people are the ones who are still trapped in what they call being alive. But when you look at a story like that, what's important is the lessons from it. And what does it say to do? So what do you think the most important things to learn from that whole experience might be?
Well, there's two. I mean, from the physical perspective is, you know, if you believe what I am saying, all beliefs cause an action. So if you believe what I'm saying, the action that should be produced is to not trust the white coat until they've earned it, and better yet, vet the local hospitals and white coats ahead of time and get involved with somebody who's medically trained that is not been bought by the system. So, I mean, that's so obvious from this story. If you don't believe what I'm saying, that's your choice, but then you also have the consequences. If you wonder, take a look at Grace's website. I have all this research that I just referenced. It's all posted. Take a look for yourself and then start going on some alternative medias and see the consistency of what I'm talking about.
Did you ask the question, if this is what's going on at this particular hospital, is this common or unique?
Did I ask that question?
I would imagine it would come up.
Well, you know, we requested a meeting with the hospital CEO and the doctor, and they refused to meet. So, I mean, I've never got a chance to ask any of these questions of them. We sent them all the research and requested a meeting. And, you know, at that point, I was pretty naive in all of this. I just thought, well, they would want to know what they did and repent of it. And so then they could stop it. I didn't realize at that point, this was back on November 8th when we requested the meeting. Grace died on October 13th. So I didn't realize they're all in on this at that point.
Right.
You know, I have a lot of different perspective today.
What I'm asking about is not whether it's unique in that hospital, you know, for more patients. I'm asking about whether you ever looked at whether this is common among other hospitals.
This is common throughout the entire world right now.
That's the point. Yeah. This is a gigantic problem.
Extremely common. This is not an anomaly. And so if you think that this story, boy, you know, poor family, poor Grace, you know, I'm sorry that happened to them. This is not like getting struck by lightning. This is not an anomaly. This is common, you know, and it's the same thing when you start looking at vaccines, the vaccine or the jab, you know, when you start hearing about, well, people are dying in their sleep and all that, you know, these are not exceptions. These are the rules. I mean, we're going to see way more cancer, way more deaths, but nobody seems to be connecting the dots. I mean, you and I are, but boy, that's sort of strange. This person died and that person died and people are dying in their sleep. And it's like,
mentioned the Milgram experiment, right?
Correct.
Blind trust of authority.
Yep. That's what's happening here. Then of course the spiritual side is the more important side. I mean, we feel that, God is using us to call people back to himself. I mean, so it's I think time is urgent. I mean, this is a time like we've never seen before. And, you know, for people to get right with God, if you know him already, you know, wake up and be part of sharing the message. And if you don't know him, you know, this is the time, you know, time is short.
But it also means a change in behavior of the blind trust while we're here, right?
That's exactly right.
In other words, It's not, I mean, there are times when you can't avoid going to the hospital, but it's not even safe to get hit by a car anymore, because what happens is when you get taken in, you're involved in the system and it's designed to ensnare you. It's not easy to get out unscathed.
It's right on. I mean, that's why I believe you've got to vet the local hospitals beforehand. And I mean, you've got to bring an advocate with you. And I mean, you've got to just be bold. This is not a time to be timid. I mean, your loved one is going to die if they get into most hospitals. And it's by design.
I don't think most people have ever heard of the advocate idea.
And we have some links in the resource tab of Grace's website on advocacy. You know, as these things we've discovered, we just put resources on the website so people can find things easily.
Right. So I guess as a final part, what's happening now? What's the current status of the legal process and what you're doing at this point?
So we've had two meetings with the legal team now. So Tom Renz is heading up the legal team.
Yeah.
I had a long meeting with them on Monday. And basically, it came out of the first meeting where I had made the suggestion because of how many hours I have in the story. I said, I think you guys need to interview me because it'll save you a bunch of time versus going through all the records from scratch. So they did that.
Yeah.
And, so it's going to be several weeks now before you're going to see the needle moving on a public basis. But they're looking at using Grace's case as a national test case.
That sounds great. Now, who are the defendants in the case? Is it just the hospital, or can you? I would hope that you could involve the individuals that you dealt with.
Yeah, I'm not going to know that until they lay the whole thing out on paper. But I believe that's what they're going to do. I mean, they mentioned that before when we had the meetings. But they have to ultimately decide that strategy. But it seems like we should cast a wide net.
I think so, because what would be nice is to decrease the motivation for employees to just follow orders and kill people.
That's right. Tom, that's what Tom convinced me of. We weren't going to do a lawsuit. And then, as God would have it, I met Tom in February. And then he convinced me that this is probably the fastest way we can stop this behavior.
Yeah. Because otherwise people say, well, I'm just following orders.
Right. So, and then where we're headed with our research is in this comparison, we think this is a genocidal movement, and so that's what we're starting to research, that whole piece, and eventually we'll make our research public, and then I'm sure there will be even a bigger target on our back, but we got to get this out.
Yeah, that's always the question. I mean, that's why people follow orders, is because if I don't follow my boss's orders, not only will I lose money, but the whole system could be against me. It's going to be terrible. And it's the Great. Same as your decision, whether to tell the truth and have the target on your back, or just go along with it and, be quiet. Same decision for everybody, especially all the employees of the system.
That's right on. I mean, that is the fastest way that this could end, is if the employees in the system let their consciences be their guide and just said, no more. I can't do this.
Become whistleblowers.
Correct.
I mean, I know Project Veritas is pretty busy right now, but the whole area of hospital exposure to what's really going on. You mentioned the Hippocratic Oath before.
And yes.
That used to be taken seriously at one time. I don't know if it was ever fully followed, but as I remember, Hippocrates, which was a lot smarter doctor than many of them now, said, he didn't say, well, don't kill too many people, compared to the ones that you help. He said, don't do any harm at all. None. Right? And use natural medicine, like what you eat. It's come a long way from that.
That's right on. I have the Hippocratic Oath on Grace's website too, and all the violations that took place in Grace's situations. There's so much on there.
Wow.
You looked at it already.
So what would you like to suggest that everybody do? And are there ways that they should support you or support the work that you're doing? Or, what would you like people to do?
Sure. There's three things that people could specifically do. One is, pray for our protection. I think
absolutely.
A reasonable thing to, it's not just reasonable. I think it might be the most important thing. Then you can share this, if every single person who hears this tells one other person, we just doubled the reach. So I mean, share
yeah.
this.
In other words, don't just listen and say, well, that was interesting, what's next?
Correct.
Take it seriously.
At least share it with one other person.
Yeah.
And third is, if you want to help, we have a How Can You Help tab on the website. So the website is ouramazinggrace.net.
Right.
There's a give, send, go there. So we're we're starting we've raised about 30,000 so far, and so we're raising money now. We have a fair sum in this. We have billboards up, and so that's why we have over 300,000 of our own money in this, and it's going to be another 300,000 for the lawsuit. So, wow. If people are inclined to help, I'd appreciate that.
People should give you as much money as possible, and I would think not just for the billboards and the lawsuit, but wouldn't hurt to give you some money for security too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you can see my security in the. Oh yeah, it's right in the. You see in the back corner over there. I got my loaded 12 gauges in the corner. That's my security right now.
Oh, I just see a dark line. That must be it.
Okay, yeah, that's the.
That's very good security, and it's a good price. Good price too. Totally agree with that, and the system agrees that that's really good security because they're trying to get rid of it, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
They're very good guidance, Whatever they tell you is horrible must be really good.
Right.
Vice versa. Okay, well, I'm really privileged that you're willing to take the time to explain this all to us and share it. And Grace is part of everybody's family. We're not, one of the big confusions is that we're supposed to believe that we're all separate from each other and we're supposed to fight about everything. That's the main thing. And hate people and look for reasons for division and say, if you don't believe exactly the same thing or come from the right country or have the same background or so-called race or whatever, that you have to be against each other. And that allows this stuff to keep going. We just realize that we're all in the same family from the same original home, then we should just be helping each other. Not because we have to, but because we want to. Spontaneous.
That's a great perspective, Richard. Thank you for sharing that.
Hopefully everybody responds and share it everywhere. And then if there are important updates and you have any time in the future, maybe you can come back and let us know what happens.
I'd be glad to. Thank you.
Yeah, neat. Okay, hold on. We'll say goodbye in the break here.
All right.
Okay, you guys, that was pretty emotional and intense and real. And that was Scott Shira. Great person, in my opinion. Being willing to share his really personal experience with his daughter, Grace. Before she died, what happened, what she went through, how that could be changed and how it could help everybody. It's really relevant, and we got to go through quite a bit. We're just living in such a, I don't even know how to describe it. It's a really unnatural situation, it seems to me, that normal people, without being subject by the enslaving mind programs, we would just be helping each other. We would be discovering natural ways to stay healthy and maximize life quality. And if somebody's sick, we'd be looking for natural and powerful ways to help them get better, which is what Hippocrates was talking about 2,500 years ago or so, I think, saying in medicine, do no harm, not like no harm. He didn't say, well, try to match the harm with the amount of people that you think you might be helping and make sure it's reasonable. He said, don't do any harm at all. First, like not one of the side issues. He said, first, do no harm. And that doctors used to take an oath to obey that. And if any of them still do take that oath, they break it immediately, because almost all of the, I think they call them medicines, poisonous chemicals, drugs, that are designed by the medical system are designed to cause harm. And there's a long backstory to that, but it's really true. They don't just say, well, rats, we didn't know it would cause harm. I think rats is okay to say on a family show, right? It actually causes harm intentionally. That's a whole different situation. So that's what Scott Shira discovered with his daughter. And her death and all of her incredible suffering that she went through and that the family went through is intended to do good in the end, because it can warn people, you know, if you're in a hospital situation like that, get an advocate, find out what that means. Go to the site, ouramazinggrace.net. And there's a lot of stuff on that site. I haven't read absolutely all of it, but I've read a lot. And information about advocates is there. Plus, we're going to be finding time to do a show in the near future with one of the advocates that started one of the main advocate companies. And I'll tell you about that soon. We're discussing the possible times for it now. And in fact, Michelle Roughton, the nurse that we had on before, has worked a lot as an advocate, saying, no, you can't do that murderous therapy on the patient that has hired me as an advocate. We're going to do this instead. And when the patient is qualified to leave, we're leaving. We're not staying around for the part where they die. We don't need that part, regardless of how profitable to you or the hospital it might be. Advocates can really do a lot of good because they have some clarity and background knowledge about what the so-called medicines really are and what they do. And most of us don't. Most of the doctors don't even know what the... I hate calling them medicines. They're toxic chemicals, but they're widely known as medicines. And most of the doctors don't even know what the medicines do. And when more than one medicine gets into the same human body and starts interacting, and just remember that medicines go to the entire body every time. They don't say, well, molecules, let's get together and only go to the liver or something. That's not what happens. And they were saying with the injections up until recently, maybe they still do, claiming that the material, the toxic liquid that comes through the injector needle, stays in the shoulder muscle, the deltoid. That's a totally ridiculous idea that they would even bother to say it. But they figure that we're just so brainwashed that we'll say, oh, it just stays in the shoulder. That's why it's safe and effective and it saves your life. And if you get sick, it means it's working. And if you die, it means it's really working. That we'd fall for that. So Scott Jarrett just recently woke up to how all that fits together and is doing some great work. I really appreciate his taking some time to come on a show like ours after being on Newsmax and all these really big high-profile shows. It's a pleasure to get to help in some way spread the knowledge that he's acquired so it could help other people avoid a similar fate and hopefully help upgrade the healthcare system to where it has actually a relation to real health. So thank you, Scott. I really appreciate your work. And remember the site, ouramazinggrace.net. The song that goes with it is great, in honor of Grace herself. And remember to keep in touch with us at lostartsradio.com. And there are all kinds of free resources there in terms of articles and videos almost every day replaced or added to, I should say. And this is all commercial free. If you have resources and want to help us stay on the air, that would be greatly appreciated too. If you have the ability to do that, there's a donate button at lostartsradio.com and also a Subscribestar link and a Bitcoin link as well. So main message though is, take care of yourself. Don't have blind trust in authority. It's a very dangerous thing to do. Follow the science like CDC and FDA and everybody says you should, except one little change. Follow real science, not just blindly what the authorities say. And that you're going to have to find out with your own investigation, even though the media has said, oh, never do your own research. That's the most dangerous thing. You're not qualified. You don't even own a research lab. How could you possibly do your own research? The reason they're telling you not to do it is because it's critical for you to do it. And in the environment that we're in right now, you really need to do a lot of self-education. It's not worth paying the price to not do it. So take care of yourself. Share it with people that are receptive, including your own family, and be an example. of what you learn, what you believe is true from experience, and spread it without even having to convince anybody, just by what you become. I think that's a message. And support Scott if you can. He needs money. Scott Jarrah at ouramazinggrace.net. They need money for lawyers. And even though he's got a security system in the room where he's talking, they could probably use additional security. So help him out, okay? And if you're a friendly billionaire, send him money. You know, in fact, if you're a friendly billionaire, even if you have no interest in supporting us at all, I want to talk to you about the things that are needed, that you could really make a huge difference in the brief time that you're alive in this lifetime. Money's not bad. It all depends what you do with it. So make it count and take care of yourself. Upgrade your own physical health and awareness, and you'll spread it automatically. So thanks for the time of being with us. I appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing you here again next show.
Amazing, amazing, amazing.